We will take questions for just a few minutes. Please, questions, not lectures.
And
I sent out a few emails, copied, and I'm curious about copyright problems with that. A lot of them are just simply somebody's writings. The other ones are historically correct. And I send them out, and obviously I am copying and disseminating that.
Yeah.
Where does the copyright problem come in, or the use of that? Is it for gain, or?
I'm not an expert in the area of intellectual property law, but the question is, are you citing it and giving attribution? I think that's important. If it's not for pecuniary gain, I think that's okay. If it's for research, there's a fair use kind of component to copyrighted efforts. If it's in the public domain, there's no problem. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I can't give you a definitive answer on that.
So it's like giving someone a book.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah. It's not... You're not giving someone a book, you're photocopying the book and giving it to someone else, and that's a problem.
Other questions?
When you were talking about the crime aspect there, something that's been going through my head in trying to evaluate some of what's been going on with our legal system, and you alluded to this, have we gone from if the crime was committed to why it was committed? And does that yield this rehabilitation aspect you were talking about?
I've never thought of it in those categories. I still think that the criminal justice system, believe me, I travel over the world. You know that, like in Mexico, if you're suspected of being like a bad guy, they can just take you and lock you up for 80 days, no charges, no nothing. I mean, it's bad news in some of those areas. So, that to the point of, I really believe there's a lot of hardworking prosecutors and defense counsel, as well as policemen who are interested in if a crime's been committed. You know, I don't think there's a deep-seated corruption or anything in those kinds of things. And I don't think it's really linked to that notion of why. I think why is an important question. What I think's happened, though, on the why question is the academics have in advance ruled out God as a factor in that kind of an issue. I think that's really what's going on. God is just excluded. Religion is excluded. Faith is excluded as a matter of course, because, you know, that's okay for flannel boards in Sunday school, but, oh, we're scientists. And so it's the rise of scientism, that science, in fact, whether hard science, biology, or soft science, sociology, both of those have ascendancy that kind of in their nature now, the way they're configured, rules out religious questions or metaphysical kinds of questions. I think that's more likely that.
Is punishment rehabilitation?
Well, biblically defined, justice is retributive. It's what that person in that crime deserves. People may learn there may be a consequence of rehabilitation, but it's not the goal of it. The scripture does talk about deterrence, not as the focus of criminal punishment, but certainly as a consequence of it. So I'd think of it in those same ways. Now, that doesn't mean, I mean, Chuck Colson's done great work in the prison fellowship dealing with these kinds of issues, and the rehabilitation's been through the gospel coming, not the criminal justice system.
Quick question here about the, you mentioned about Darwinism and such, but I found this in, Montana's rich in fossils and very rich in younger science. Mm-hmm. And so we've been doing some things in that. And we find that as we approach that and show that modern science has totally disintegrated evolution, that science is on our side. Science supports the Bible wholeheartedly, science properly called, that you can avoid a lot of these discussions about, well, science says this, but the Bible says that over there. And give me a little insight into that direction of thought in our witnessing and changing our culture.
Well, again, if Christ is Lord of all, there are many directions. There's not a molecule in the universe that doesn't point to the reality of who God is. And so there's not like one modality. That's all I'm saying. You've got to be careful with the one modality or thinking that it's like this is the key linchpin that, you know, all the dominoes fall if we do this. That's just not been the case, I think, empirically. And it's not the case, I think, philosophically either. We need to be open because God is a God in the right sense who loves diversity. You know, he when he creates and he doesn't say, okay, salmon, I want you to spawn here. And then if something, he just says, go team. He delegates. His idea is flourishing. And so in the same way, I think we as we exercise dominion over that created order, there's a lot of innovation that can occur. I think that's really important that we recognize that. And I think it is true that ultimately the godless science will collapse on itself. It has to. Knowledge, in fact, presupposes God. Now, we might not recognize that. We may suppress that truth. But all those things, I think you're right. I think it does point to those things, but I just don't think that we need to think that there's a linchpin or a key on that.
One of the things I've appreciated, Jeff, is that you've brought to our table what some of us have probably thought about, but not most of us, perhaps, and that is that the Darwinian thing has interjected itself into every discipline and has been predominant. And so here you have a young earther, by the way, that even challenges the idea that our argument about evolution, creation, ought to be many-faceted and not just about dates and things like that. So other questions?
You discussed that chain of authority that went from vertical to horizontal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And oftentimes you referenced that there is a collapse, that everything is just brought down to the same level. I assume you're speaking to the effect of postmodernity or what postmodernism creates, that there's a leveling effect. So
paganism, yeah, it facilitates paganism.
Right. And yeah. So I think the trajectory is a type of neo-tribalism will occur. These like groups will get together if everything becomes relative, right? So I hang out with the people that view life the same way I do. So if that's kind of the angle or trajectory societies are going in Western civilization as they're tearing down the walls, for you, practically speaking to groups like us, the church or assemblies of Christians, what would you say is a 5, 10, 15, 25, 50-year plan? Like, what should we be doing now to turn the tide, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very optimistic for the future. It doesn't mean we're not going to have suffering and some kinds of issues. Well, if let me go strategically first. Psalm 78 is a masterful psalm, and part of the guts of that talks about influencing children's children. What do you want to do to have children's children, okay, that are faithful in things? He says basically they need to understand or not forget three things: God, God's works, and God's law. Now, I think you can spin out from that, and that's how I designed the curriculum of the Blackstone Legal Fellowship, a whole host of things that we can implant today in our children, and those kinds of things do hold the promises, fidelity, in mass down the road. So I think that's really important. And, of course, God's works can be his works of creation, his works of redemption, his works of providence. God himself can be the master beauty of the Trinity, of who he is, and also the attacks on that, the various heresies and the implications thereof. God's law can be the law, the work of the law written on the heart, Romans 2, as well as his very moral order, his special revelatory order. All those things, it's just a rich, deep idea there, and that's why I think that can keep us busy. From a tactical standpoint, I think we need to understand a line, and a lot of us, frankly, have to grow a new spine. I think we're apathetic. I think we don't have the courage to speak respectfully. I think there are people, and the blogosphere is full of it, that people want to rant, and they dust themselves off and go, well, I was faithful to God. I only got one chance, and I let him have it. And you became completely irrelevant for the next 50 years. So I think you've got to treat people as you want to be treated. I think you've got to understand they're made in the image of God. I think you need to, at the same time, take every thought captive to the obedience of Christ and tear down strongholds and bad thoughts, you know, 2 Corinthians 10 kind of stuff. So there's a lot out there that we can do. I think one of the key things, though, is working in alignments, working in communities. You cannot do the Lone Ranger, Clint Eastwood kind of, you know, I'll just vanquish them all by myself. Not going to happen. God never works that way, really. There's always, you know, even when Elijah felt alone, right, there was always this communal aspect, you know, supernaturally with him. So I think those are just some ideas there. I think there are organizations that are doing well. I don't want to sound like commercial, but you need to identify those kinds of good organizations. I think you need to support your pastor. I think it would be very helpful to him and not be caviling. And, oh, you didn't talk about this today. Well, okay, but, you know, ask him why and talk about these things and how can you encourage that? Serve. You know, it's interesting. Jesus says this, and we don't apparently believe it. The first shall be last. The last shall be first. The greatest among you is he who serves. That sounds like kind of a recipe there for how we interact. So there's a lot of those kinds of things that apply, I think, on a tactical level.
Hi, I'm Pat from Carbon County. And in honor of Veterans Day and our children in the military, are there some hopeful things going on in the military that ADF is involved in?
Well, the military is a battleground. You know, the Air Force Academy just made an oath invoking God optional. We helped to design and create something called the Chaplains Alliance, which is involving these various chaplaincies to be able to have the religious liberty to actually do what their religious convictions ask them to do in terms of sacraments and in terms of teaching and so forth. So I think that is a very positive thing that's going on. I think that if you look at the rank and file, both officers, stay out of the Pentagon for right now, but the basic line officers and enlisted men, we have a very educated military, and I think that there is a truth to the notion there are no atheists in foxholes, but we need to support them and to help them. I can't speak globally about that. I don't really know, but I think it is important that the military can be a good thing for a nation.
Thanks for coming. Yeah.